How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We have tons of stuff to talk about, as we do every Sunday here on Sports Byline USA. It is Survivor Series Sunday, traditionally one of the five biggest WWE pay-per-views of the year. Last year, it was not. And in fact, last year they considered dropping the Survivor Series name, but Vince McMahon ended up changing his mind after actually announcing that he was no longer going to be using the Survivor Series name. He changed his mind. The name is back. Show is taking place tonight. There's one traditional Survivor Series match, and the main event of the show, it is John Cena as special referee for the Wade Barrett-Randy Orton Championship match. And the stipulations are that if Wade Barrett leaves as the champion, John Cena is free of his Nexus commitments. And if Randy Orton leaves with the title, John Cena is fired. And there are a lot of different storylines that could come into play here, including Miz and his Money in the Bank briefcase. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on when we preview that show. Plus the SmackDown main event, which is Edge versus Kane. I've not seen SmackDown this week, but Mike Sempervivi has, so we'll talk to him about that show. And the go-home for the big main event from the SmackDown side at Survivor Series tonight. We're also going to talk about the UFC 123 event from last night with BJ Penn and Matt Hughes in the main event, as well as Quentin Jackson and Lyoto Machida. Talk about the fallout from that show, where they're going for future events. UFC in Australia, UFC on Super Bowl weekend, and UFC on New Year's Eve. Plus, the big show coming up with George St. Pierre and Josh Koscheck. So a lot of UFC news to get into today. Also, a lot of other news from the world of wrestling and mixed martial arts, including WWE cuts this week. Shawn Michaels was involved in an auto accident. His family is fine. We'll talk to you about what happened there and how Shawn Michaels reacted. Plus, a WWE star arrested for a DUI, Hulk Hogan's A&E special, Impact, SmackDown, Old School Raw, the Hall of Fame in Atlanta, and we unfortunately got to open up the next segment with the story of two deaths. Chris Long, who worked as Solid in Lucha Libre USA, and Gran Naniwa in Japan. So all of that is coming up after the break as we kick off this show. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts as we head into the Survivor Series pay-per-view, which is coming up moments after this show goes off the air. And before we get going, Mike, last night I was trying to order the UFC pay-per-view, and apparently in the afternoon here in Seattle there was one of those deals where they do a test of the emergency broadcast system. And I don't know how or why this occurred, but they did this test, and it screwed up the pay-per-view ordering capabilities of Comcast. Why? I have absolutely no idea. But apparently, a lot of people here in Seattle with Xfinity and Comcast tried to order the UFC pay-per-view and were unable to. So, of course, I called, and I was trying to get through, and the wait times were 1 hour to talk to somebody about ordering this pay-per-view. And anyway, when you call, there's usually a deal where they say press 1 for troubleshooting, press 2, blah, 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 press 5 for pay-per-view. So, of course, I press 5, and they have an advertisement for an upcoming pay-per-view. Now, you would think if you called on Saturday night, the advertisement would be for, say, the UFC pay-per-view that is airing on Saturday night. Nope. The advertisement was for the Survivor Series. So I called up, I'm there listening to this advertisement, and I swear to God, they billed Survivor Series as starting at 8:30 Eastern, 5:30 Pacific. They had the time wrong by a half hour. So Comcast and Xfinity, got a love-hate relationship with these people, and last night it was definitely a hate relationship. But we'll get into UFC and Survivor Series here in just a moment. But Mike is our Japanese correspondent. I know you've got some stuff to say about the death of Gran Naniwa, passed away at the age of 34. Tell us about his career.
Yeah, very shocking. You know, kind of looking at the site last night to watch the UFC post-fight press conference up on the site, and I saw that, you know, it was put up there that Gran Naniwa had passed away, and only 34 years old of a heart attack. Now, he had passed away on October 6th. But due to the family's request, it was not announced until after a wake and a funeral were held in the Buddhist tradition, in which the announcement's not made till 49 days after someone's passing. So it was really a shock, one, to see that, and then just at only 34 years old. And Naniwa, Mikanoshu Pro was a organization that was started up by a great Sasuke, and it got known in the United States because of the work of appearing on ECW shows, and I believe a couple of the Raw shows that Sasuke was on when they started up their light heavyweight division again. It ended up, you know, it was supposed to be for Sasuke to get into the WWF, and it ended up with Taka Mikanoshu and Kai and Tai-in. But when the Naniwa started out, there were some really great matches going on in Mikanoshu because they had this great level of talent, great Sasuke, Super Delphin, Naniwa, Ultimo Dragon, all of Kai and Tai, and at the time, I mean, they really were putting on some of the best matches going in the world, tag matches that were incredibly fun and really laid a forebearer of a style to what we have today with Dragon Gate USA. And it's just very surprising. He had the gimmick of a crab, which I know sounds kind of ridiculous, but that's what they had. They had over-the-top kind of cartoonish characters that worked a lucha, you know, Japanese style, and he was the grand the grand crab, you know, competed with all the mannerisms, and he had over-the-top big foam pinchers on his hands when he would come to the ring. But put on some really great matches and just, you know, kind of drifted off in his career, and I hadn't heard much about him recently. I guess he was still working for the company, at least, or at least was, you know, kind of working a little bit, but hadn't heard much about him. And just very sad and very surprising to see it come up, because you don't hear about, you know, wrestler deaths early in Japan all that often. It just, I'm not sure what kind of heart attack it was. I guess we'll find out later on. But just a real surprise, you know, dying at only 34 years old. And it was amazing, too, to think about at the time he started his career was having these matches. He was only a teenager, which I didn't realize either.
Yeah, he did the rope walk. He basically would not like the Undertaker, where Undertaker's on the top rope and he grabs the guy's hand and it basically helps him for balance as he walks the top rope. Naniwa would get on the middle rope, and he would use the top rope on the back of his hamstrings for balance, and he would do this wacky, I don't even know what you would call it, a crab dance to the middle of the ring?
Yeah, it was kind of like crab walk, you know, back and forth, you know, just kind of side to side, and that, he became popular because, those types of old taunts and moves were used in the, like, WCW versus the World game and a lot of video games where you could create your own characters, so... Mm-hmm. You know, that was actually another way he got known, is through those games of, like, you know, who actually did this, and people actually found out that's who it was.
Yeah, I also did not know that he was so young when he started, because, of course, he was masked. And I've mentioned this many times in terms of, like, Lucha Libre. One of the benefits of being a masked guy in Lucha is I once saw Ryo de Jalisco Sr. come out to be honored by CMLL, and he still got his mask. And so, you know, he came out there and he had a cape on and he had his mask. And, you know, the guy could have been 200 years old and he still looked largely like he did during his prime. You would never know he was so old. And it's the same thing when you're young. You have no idea this guy is so young because he's masked. So I remember watching him in like the mid-90s, and, you know, I got the news last night that he had passed away, and I thought, man, that's too bad. I wonder how old he was, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s. You find out he's 34 in 2010, and it's like, my God, he was young when he was doing all that stuff. So, very sad story, heart attack, don't really know more.
It was really good, too, for a lot of the people that only saw Kaz Hayashi in WCW or only saw Kai and Tai, the WWF version, you know, it's not a case of, well, it happened in Japan with those guys, so it must have been that much better. It really was some really, really super fun stuff that they were doing.
Also like to mention the death of Chris Long, who worked as Solid in Lucha Libre USA. He was kind of booked as a sidekick for Marco Corleone. Apparently he was working as a bouncer, and last night at a strip club in Georgia, I guess there was some trouble, and him and some other guys kicked some guys out of the strip club, and he actually tweeted about it shortly thereafter, saying that a bunch of guys jobbed the security guards, and apparently those guys went home, they got guns, They came back, they opened fire, and Chris Long was killed. So our condolences to him. We don't really know anything more other than that. Probably talk about this more next week, but very sad story there. And Chris Long, I don't have an age for him, but he was not particularly old, and always terrible when things like this happen.
Oh, yeah, very much so. And I believe they actually have a show scheduled in December in Albuquerque, so it'll be interesting to see. I'm sure they're going to make some announcement or something leading up to that, too, if they're going to do anything for Long or his family.
Last night was the UFC 123 pay-per-view, and of course the double main event on the show, it was BJ Penn and Matt Hughes, and Lyoto Machida and Quentin Jackson, and the BJ Penn fight ended in 21 seconds when BJ overwhelmed him and knocked him out pretty much immediately. And they have already booked BJ Penn for the late February show at the Acer Arena in Australia. And what were your thoughts on that particular fight right there? And is this the end for Matt Hughes?
I don't think it's the end for Matt Hughes. I mean, they certainly presented it as such. I mean, yes, he was on a little bit of a roll, and yes, it was stopped dead, you know, after those three consecutive wins. But, I mean, you know, that short kind of right hand, I mean, all it's going to defend is how his head feels. I mean, if he seems like he could get rocked like that again, then, you know, and obviously he looked that way after the fight, that he looked incredibly depressed. But I don't think it necessarily has to be the end. He got caught with a counter right to the chin, put him on his back, and, you know, took four punches from up top. Those things happen. You know, it surprised me that it did, but those things happen, and I don't think it's quite the end yet for Hughes.
We're going to talk about the full card here in a moment, but I did want to mention also that the main event of the show did end with I actually had it scored as a draw on my scorecard because I thought the first round was close enough that it could have gone either way. Had Quentin Jackson winning the second round and Lyoto Machida winning the third round. The judges ended up giving it to Quentin because the 10-point must system gave him the first two rounds, and even though Lyoto won the third round decisively, it was not enough for a 10-8 for the judges, so Quentin got the win. He was baffled by it, and Dana said that he deserved the win, and he also said that despite what both men said, there would be no rematch. So we're going to talk about that when we come back from the break, plus the rest of the show and Survivor Series. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here from Seattle, Washington, where it is snowing. It is actually snowing quite a bit, and it's completely ridiculous. But we'll talk about that. Actually, we won't talk about that. Let's talk about pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. UFC 123 last night, the main event. What were your thoughts on that fight and your thoughts on Dana White's decision to not do a rematch, despite the fact that it was a close fight and both men want a rematch?
I was really surprised by that. I mean, he was all about some business getting done last night. I mean, I know we're going to start talking about, I mean, the Penn Fitch has been made in Sutteropolis. All of these things kind of happened last night, Parisian getting cut. And he announces that they're not going to have a rematch. And now, this was not the most exciting fight in the world. I do know that. And it was, you know, Machida was very cautious. And, I mean, I'm with you. I was really close. And I do give 10-10 rounds when I think they're deserved. You know, that was really close, but I did have Machida winning it, and even in my notes just put but barely, and I had Rampage winning the second round and Machida winning the third, so it wasn't so bad of a fight or so boring of a fight or so awful of a fight where you couldn't do another one and have people get into it. Now, you probably have to attach it with something else, you know, over top of it as a main event to sell it as a pay-per-view, I think, because it wasn't that dynamic of a fight, but you know, I don't think people had that big of an issue with it, where they wouldn't want to see it again. And I'm really surprised at why, because what else are you going to do now if they're not going to have a rematch? Everybody else right now in that division for the next couple of months has got an opponent with the exception of Matt Hamill. And he was apparently promised somebody in the top 10 or at least a big-name fighter from the face. Now, I figured he'd get the winner of, like, Vera and Thiago Silva, or he'd get, you know, Rosario Nogueira or something like that. I mean, I don't think I want to see Hamill Machida or Hamill against Rampage. And I just don't understand why you could have them go in April again, and that kind of sets up, because everybody else has got an opponent in either February or March, or has just already fought. So why not have that fight again? I can't see how having that with some, like, WEC type of fights, and, I mean, there's enough fights that they can put together where I'm kind of surprised that he just said, absolutely not, no way we're doing this.
Yeah, I was surprised, but, hey, that's what's he wanted to do, so I guess we'll, I guess he wants bigger things for Quentin Jackson or something. I don't know exactly what it is, but.
Well, I guess that would mean the Shogun, I guess it would be Shogun Evans' winner, wouldn't it?
They're talking about that. They're talking about that one, but
unless it's Bader Jones' winner, which I don't know if I want to see John Jones and Rampage,
yeah,
for Rampage's sake.
Also on the show last night, Gerald Harris and Michael Falcao in Falcao's debut, and they had a largely horrible fight. Falcao, this was his UFC debut, and when you debut in UFC, you presume that, you know, these men are going to go in there and have a great showing and show that they have something that is, you know, worthy of being brought back. And nope, they went in there and did nothing. Almost 4 straight minutes in the first round without engaging. And Falcao finally did engage, and he took it to Harris, and he destroyed him, and he had him in a rear naked choke, and it looked like it was over. The horn sounded. Falcao refused to let go for about 3 seconds. The referee finally pried him off and then went up to Falcao and said, "Didn't you hear the bell?" And Falcao simply said, "No, I didn't hear the bell." And so the referee said, "Okay." I thought, are you kidding me? What do you expect him to say? "Yes, I heard the bell. I tried to kill the man." So anyway, I thought that was stupid. He should have been docked a point or something like that. But regardless, the rest of the other two rounds were just a lot of nothing happening. And Joe Rogan on commentary even noted that Booker Joe Silva was outside with his hands in the air wondering what these men were doing. This is not what you do on a UFC show. But Falcao ended up getting the win via decision. I mean, he looked good when he was actually doing stuff, but if you go if you say the fight as a whole was 100%, then he did something for about 8% of this fight, which left a good 92% of the fight doing nothing. So anyway, this pretty much sucked.
Yeah, Dan Bergliotta is like a cartoon character sometimes, and what made it even better was just kind of his face, too. If he had the stern face of, "Did you hear the bell? No? Okay." And just kind of like, you know, kind of shook it off and, all right, see ya.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, it started off so well, too, because, I mean, Falcao looks, he is very impressive looking, you know, trained with Shoot at Box. I mean, big, strong. He really did beat the crap out of Harris in that first round, but he just kept getting slower and slower and slower afterwards. And I think he threw 7 strikes in the third round and still, you know, pretty much dominated Harris. So, yeah, that was not exactly how you debut, and, you know, I don't think, it's not like either one of those dudes is getting cut, but I would be concerned for the next fight if it happens again.
You know, they're just, the thing about the Shoot Box guys and Falcao and you know, Vanderlei Silva, not so much now, but certainly back in the day when he was younger. I mean, there's certain fighters like George St. Pierre, for example, and Randy Couture, where they want to beat you, but they want to beat you with, like, good technique. They want to, you know, they want to be a better athlete than you and be the superior fighter. And then there are other guys that just, like, you know, they work on their technique and such, but they go in there and they're okay hurting you. You know what I mean? They're okay putting a hurting on you. And Falcao looked like one of those guys where, I'm going to put a beating on you, and maybe I'm going to leave this hold on a little bit longer, and that's just, I mean, just a mean guy. I mean, there are fighters that are just mean guys, and Falcao really came off as one of those guys, and might serve him well someday, and then again, maybe it won't. Phil Davis beat Tim Boesch with a Kimura that he claimed he invented. He put on this wacky hold.
I'll accept that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know if he invented it or not. I'll just say that he invented it. I may meet the man someday, and he may want to show me something else he invented. So, yeah, he tapped this guy out and looked great. I mean, no competition for Phil Davis here on this show. He's going to be something one of these days. He's very athletic guy.
He's something now. He's getting damn close.
Yeah. Yeah, he's going to be something big.
Yeah, the battle of pro wrestling nicknames, too. Mr. Wonderful defeats the Barbarian. But, yeah, I mean, Davis, when he was at Penn State, was a beast. He was an absolute beast. And it looks like he's just going to grow into his body more. I mean, you know, his striking is for as short of time as he's been doing MMA, I mean, he has just gotten that much better. And it was, I don't know how to explain. It was something your brother would do to you, like in the basement or on the schoolyard or something like that, just like kind of tying you up, where he just had this kind of one-armed Kimura, and, you know, from one angle, if you were looking at it, it looked like he kind of had him in a dragon sleeper. I mean, it was just very impressive, because it's not like Boach is a small dude, and he's controlling that one arm and had it behind him to submit him. It was really impressive.
I actually did a grappling match with somebody on our message board down in Vegas a couple of years back, Peach Machine, and it was not this exact hold, but Peach has done some amateur wrestling, and we were grappling, and he tried something remarkably similar to this on me, and I don't want to take away from Phil Davis, but part of me was thinking, you know, this is like there are no Kimuras in amateur wrestling, but you know there are certain holds used to turn your opponent over and that sort of thing, and I kind of watched this and I remembered that and I thought, you know, I'll bet you've done something like this before, young man, but. It was pretty impressive. George Sotiropoulos beat Joe Lauzon, and Lauzon's last big fight was in Boston, where he looked awesome, destroying Gabe Rudiger. And he came in here, and he was winning the stand-up in the first round, but then he apparently got tired, and Sotiropoulos did not get tired. And there you go. He worked him over in the second round and just schooled him on the ground, Sotiropoulos, and ended up tapping him out with a Kimura as well. So George Sotiropoulos, Australian, going to the Australia UFC event at the Ace Arena at the end of February, and he's going to be super over at that show.
Oh, yeah, just a little bit. And, I mean, him in there with Dennis Seaver, too, is going to be awesome, because it just a great clashing of styles. And Seaver looked really impressive in choking out Andre Winner and the UFC 122 show last weekend or 2 weekends ago, whenever it was. So that's, you know, really an exciting fight. And I mean, Sotiropoulos just, Lauzon won the first round. I mean, flat out. I mean, it looked really, really good, but it just, Sotiropoulos just kept moving along at the same pace he was in the first round, and Lauzon just, for some reason, hit a wall.
On the Spike show, we had Aaron Simpson losing to Mark Munoz via decision. I agreed with that. It was a very close fight. I thought Munoz won, but very close. Could have gone either way. And a very competitive fight as well. Did not win fight of the night, however. That went to Lauzon and Sotiropoulos. And also, Matt Brown lost to Brian Foster via guillotine on the Spike show, and that was a pretty fun fight as well. So overall, a good night of televised action.
Yeah, and then they also showed Carol Parisian losing to Dennis Hallman. Now, Parisian's had, and you know, Joe Rogan said it best on the show too, he was never the same after not getting that title shot against Matt Hughes, but was wiped out by Dennis Hallman. And I think it was a quick stoppage, but it didn't really take away from the fact that Carol Parisian probably was not going to win that fight by the looks of the shape he was in and just his general attitude kind of after the fight, too. So, you know, it's amazing the talent that seems to be slipping away from Carol Parisian, and apparently Dana White cut him in the press conference afterwards.
Yeah, that is the end of... it's kind of weird to see a guy cut during the press conference as well, and I saw Carol on Inside MMA and looked like he had his head on straight and looked in shape, but then I guess when he took his shirt off, his midsection was not in shape. So I don't know what happened with Carl Parisian. It's a sad story, and hopefully he turns out all right. But I don't know. This was not his best night. We're going to move on here and start talking about the Survivor Series. We've got a lot of big matches on the show tonight. It's taking place as soon as the show goes off the air. Rare weekend where I think a lot of people who are pro wrestling and MMA fans may be more into Survivor Series than last night's UFC. So we're going to talk about the lineup of that show there, all the matches on the event, and do a quick preview here. So that is coming up here in just a moment, plus a lot of other pro wrestling and MMA news. So stay tuned. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And for all the news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, always head to WrestlingObserver.com. And in fact, as soon as this show is over, head immediately over there, and we've got live, ongoing play-by-play of the Survivor Series pay-per-view. If you've decided not to get the show, or if you're getting the show and you want to see what Dave and I think about it, head over to WrestlingObserver.com, and we'll have the ongoing play-by-play on the front page, and later on this evening, a brand new radio show with Dave and I running down the event in detail. You can always check out the free radio shows on the website by scrolling down on the right-hand side of the page at WrestlingObserver.com. Just click on the link. They're free MP3 downloads. Listen to them. If you like what you hear, consider signing up. It's $10.99 a month. Gets you full access to everything we do, all of the weekly newsletters, Figure Four Weekly and the Wrestling Observer newsletter. Several issues out every single week. Plus, we do 15 to 20 brand new radio shows every week. So if you love this show, you only get to hear it one time per week. If you sign up, $10.99 a month, you get 15 to 20 new radio shows every single week. Plus, all of the radio shows are archived. Every show we have ever done since the fall of 2005 is archived for members. So if you pay $10.99, you basically get tens of thousands of radio shows at your disposal. You don't have to pay anything extra. You don't have to pay extra for past shows or anything like that. Your one monthly fee gets you access to everything. And we've got interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling. Guys like Steve Austin, Ric Flair, Bruno Sammartino. Lance Storm is on every other week. The list goes on and on. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com, for all the latest news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Also, you can always send email questions to the show at WOL at WrestlingObserver.com. That's WOL at WrestlingObserver.com. If we don't get to your email during the show, we do save all of the emails, and we'll try to get through them the next week on the show. So send them in. Hopefully not time-sensitive questions in case we don't get to them on the show, but we will get to them in the coming week. So send those to WOL at WrestlingObserver.com. We'll get into some of those in a second. Mike, tonight is the Survivor Series pay-per-view, the main event. It is Randy Orton versus Wade Barrett. Pinfalls and submissions only. John Cena is the special referee. If Wade Barrett wins the title, Cena is free of his Nexus commitments. And if he does not, then John Cena is fired from WWE. There are a lot of different ways this can go. Cena can help him win. Cena cannot help him win. Cena could help him lose. Cena could not help him lose. Miz could cash in his money in the bank before or after the match. There's a million things they could do. At this point, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking they won't just have Barrett pin Orton clean.
That's probably a good guess.
I don't want to play too much fantasy booking into it, because there's a zillion and one things that they could actually do, and they've done a good job. You know, R-Truth could, you know, turn on somebody. You have the Miz aspect. Yeah, I mean, there's a million and one things they could actually do with this. I don't even know, but I'll throw this one out there. Cena helps Barrett pin Orton, you know, he tries to call it down in the middle the entire time. He can't, you know, he's forced into it. He sees that Barrett's about to get beat. He finally helps him win just so he doesn't get fired. You know, after the match, Orton attacks Barrett and Cena. Miz comes out, pins Barrett, takes the title. Cena gets fired because Barrett doesn't get to leave with the title, which leads us to some drama leading into December and then the Royal Rumble. And if Triple H is going to come back, it's not like Cena's going to disappear for good or anything like that, like this is 80s territorial style or anything. They're still going to bring him up on the show. I'm sure he'll still somehow be on the show. But with Triple H coming back, I think you can soften that blow a little bit. You don't have to have Cena be the bad guy, and you can keep this thing rolling along into the Royal Rumble.
I predict, this is very complicated here, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, so if I pause for a while to think, that you'll know what happened. I predict that Wade Barrett wins the title, and I think that John Cena will count the pinfall. I don't think John Cena's going to help. I predict we have some sort of referee bump. John Cena goes down. There's some sort of interference. Perhaps Miz comes out and gives Randy Orton the skull-crushing finale on the briefcase or something like that. Wade Barrett covers. John Cena wakes up, counts the pin. Wade is the champion. John Cena is free. John Cena then immediately gives Wade the FU, laying him out. Miz jumps in the ring, and he wants to cash in Money in the Bank. And, of course, you can't cash in until the guy wakes up. And as the guy is starting to wake up, Randy Orton hits Miz with the RKO for the DQ. So Miz does not get the title. He gets screwed out of the title by Randy Orton. And you've got a Miz-Randy Orton feud and a John Cena-Wade Barrett feud. And that actually sets up the main event of the Madison Square Garden show at the end of December, which usually these shows, these house shows, you cannot read anything into them because they're done way in advance. And then, of course, you've got pay-per-views in between and plans change on a weekly basis. But the main event of that show is a four-way in a cage with Miz, Orton, Cena, and Barrett. So actually, that does set that up, and you could do that match on pay-per-view as well. So that's my prediction to tie everything together.
You see, that's why you're the boss man, because that's a lot better than what my other idea was going to be, which was they go back into time a little bit since we just came off the old school Raw, and there's some sort of, you know, distraction, there's some sort of mess where Darren Young comes out in whiteface, and they yell out, "Oh my God, it's two Cenas, like it was two Hefners," and then something could happen that way.
That's not a bad idea. Does John Cena have a twin brother?
Darren Young, of course.
That's true, but I guess you could do that. I was thinking, like, what is John Cena's brother's name? He has a brother.
That's right. This would be a good time if they do something where Cena gets fired. Can you imagine, like, home in Massachusetts on the home front, with you can bring Dad back again, and
that's right.
Cena can come back as the Soaring Eagle.
John, the Soaring Eagle has been released.
True story, people. We'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to the WWE cuts here in a while, but the Swagger Soaring Eagle. Actually, you know, now that it's been reported that the Swagger Soaring Eagle has been released, you know, part of me expects him to be on the pay-per-view tonight, but we'll see what happens. So anyway, that is the main event of the show. A lot of intrigue going into it, which is interesting for a WWE pay-per-view. You know, it's funny. I've argued for a long time that WWE needs no more than 12 pay-per-views per year. For a while there, they had 14, and I think one year they had 15. But now they're down to 13, and they've got this period during the fall where there's like, I think it's Bragging Rights and Hell in the Cell are 2 weeks apart. And, you know, the best WWE pay-per-views, like WrestleMania and this one here, for example, they're the ones where they have like a full 4 weeks, or in the case of WrestleMania, sometimes 5 or 6 weeks to build up the show. You know, when you spend time building up a show, people want to see what happens on it. It's like, this is not rocket science. You know what I mean? It really is not rocket science. You eliminate these extra pay-per-views. You give every show 4 weeks, maybe even 5 weeks, and I think you would do better numbers, because it gives you time to slowly build up the storylines and build intrigue to the shows. And they've had a while to build up Survivor Series here. The last pay-per-view, what's today, November 21st? Bragging Rights took place on October 24th. So they've had almost a full month to build up this pay-per-view, which sounds ridiculous, but, you know, prior to Bragging Rights, it was 2 weeks. So, anyway.
But that's the problem. The fatigue for the consumer comes in, and since you haven't made Survivor Series a, you know, it's not the name, it's the content. Since they haven't made it something that people have cared about in a while, it just becomes overkill and just another show, and that's why people just become desensitized to it.
So on this show also, we have Kane versus Edge. It's for the World Heavyweight Championship. I have not seen SmackDown yet, Mike, but I know that Edge has kidnapped Paul Bearer, and despite all of the drama with TSA, he's getting him through all of these checkpoints at the airport fairly easily somehow, and I'm not quite sure how. Perhaps he's driving all over the place, although that does not explain how he got back from the UK. What are your thoughts on that show and the match tonight?
It was a lot of the hokey stuff, which, you know, it's Kane, and it's not the best part of SmackDown or anything. It was funny to watch SmackDown, because it's not like it was a bad show or anything like that, but to see Nexus and Roddy Piper's promo on Raw, and then to see Edge, you know, having Paul Bearer all tied up and doing, you know, it just it not being able. I think it was a very cornball and PG way to play it, him having him kidnapped and having his mouth taped up and Kane crying. Kane was crying in the boiler room.
Oh,
now, compared that to how Piper was selling the pay-per-view, and you know, it's not like they did a lot on Raw to sell the pay-per-view and any of the other matches, but it was still probably a little more entertaining, even though the matches were better on SmackDown, than to watch them try to get people interested in a series of single matches to hype up the one Survivor Series match that's on the show. I mean, it's like, you know, when you have Tyler Rex out there, and again, Tyler Rex loses to the Big Show quickly, and you have these, I mean, it's a match just to have a match on the pay-per-view, and, you know, again, the show wasn't bad or anything, but what they were trying to build up, you know, just, it's hard to get interested in it.
Well, one of the things that I think has been a problem for TNA, and at times WWE as well, is you need to announce a card for a show. You need to announce the matches on the show. And you can do a little bit for all of the matches. I mean, we've seen, I like to try to learn from history, unlike some of these wrestling promotions. We have seen that if you've got a pay-per-view coming up and the only thing that you have announced is the main event, usually it's not going to do very well on pay-per-view, unless it's like a mega, mega main event. It's always good to have a card and let people know that, okay, if I spend this $54, you know, maybe John Morrison and Sheamus is going to be a good match. But with that said, you don't have to give equal time to all eight matches on your show. You know, you give a little bit of time to each of them. You shoot a little angle here and there, that sort of thing. But the important thing is you really need to really focus on those main events. And as you noted on Raw, we'll talk about old school Raw here in a bit, but they didn't do a whole lot for a lot of these other matches. I mean, they did a little thing for Morrison and Sheamus, but it was about, you know, 2% of the total show. And they did a little bit of stuff for the Nexus Vladimir Kozlov match. But I mean, the big important thing was the main event, and they hit a home run with it. And that's the key. If you can hit a home run with your main event angle, and you've got a card, then that is this pay-per-view should do pretty well by WWE standards. It's not going to do a UFC number. It's not going to beat UFC this weekend domestically, but, you know, that's just a completely different sort of deal there. But, you know, this is going to do better. This is going to do better than 100,000 buys domestic. Let's just put it that way. So it's very important to push your main event, and I thought they did an awesome job with that on Raw with Roddy Piper.
Yeah, and they did a good job putting thought into this whole thing, even though it's been a little PG and a little bit predictable at times and kind of goofy. They've done a good job as far as intertwining everybody that's been in that story. And that's the one thing, too, in any era, you always have these intertwining stories that make interplay better. And they can do that with some of the mid-card guys, too, which they should have done that better with this Survivor Series match or really with any of those matches like that. If they would just spend a little more time thinking about that sort of stuff, that's all you kind of need.
Also on the show, it's Team Laycool. Layla and Michelle are facing Natalya in a handicap match, and most likely this will signal the return of Beth Phoenix. It's interesting because you've got this match and you've got Morrison and Sheamus, and during the Morrison-Sheamus match, I don't know if it's going to happen tonight, but Triple H is set to return like any time, and most likely it's going to happen tonight. So I don't know if I see two big returns on the same show, not that Beth Phoenix is as big a return as Triple H, but, you know, one of those will likely be held off until tomorrow. They may want to wait until Raw to bring back Triple H since it'll be a bigger audience, or maybe they'll do that with Beth Phoenix feeling that people should pay for the big Triple H return. So we'll talk about this more after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined as always by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, we were talking about big returns at Survivor Series. Beth Phoenix is set to return anytime, and Triple H as well. And would you have them both return on the same show to add value to the show and get people who didn't buy the show kicking themselves for not doing so? Or would you split it up and have one return tonight, one return tomorrow? And if so, which would be which?
It doesn't matter that they're both on tonight. To be honest, I really wouldn't rush Triple H back either. I mean, I think they can wait till December. I wouldn't wait till the Royal Rumble. That would be too predictable. But I think they can wait till December, even though they probably won't. I would probably have Triple H come back tonight. That way you start off Raw, and then you have, you know, you would figure you're going to get a bump in Raw. You know, at least that would, that's what the mentality would be of people watching, and that's when you have Beth Phoenix pop back out there and make an appearance there.
We got a lot of matches still to talk about on this show today. Let's do one more before we head to our hourly break. It is Morrison and Sheamus, and I am expecting Triple H to return here tonight or tomorrow. And if you're going to do Sheamus Triple H, I don't know if I would have Triple H cost Sheamus the match, because Sheamus has lost a lot of matches of late. Maybe I would do a deal where Sheamus beats Morrison clean, and then he goes to destroy him afterwards, and that's when Triple H runs out to make the save. So at least Triple H is coming back to face a winner as opposed to a loser. But I'm sure they could go really either way. And which way would you do it?
I see, that's what I'm surprised. They can't have it wait, because you could always bring him back in December. I mean, I think that Morrison and Sheamus can pull it off for a little bit longer than they have. But I would actually have Morrison win tonight. Sheamus just absolutely destroy him, and then, yeah, I mean, again, you can lay credence into him coming back on Raw, too, if he went and just destroyed him so bad and started beating him up tomorrow night, and then, you know, Triple H gets the big comeback there.
We're going to head to the hourly break. We'll be back in about 7 minutes, and we've got a lot of stuff to talk about. We've got a full hour of the show left. We're going to talk about the rest of the Survivor Series card. Then we got some email questions. You can always send those to WOL at WrestlingObserver.com. If we don't get to them this week, we'll get to them next week. So coming up here in just a moment, so hang on. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live, here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as always by Mike Sempervivi of the Gron, Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare.
The Grande Sonic Terror.
I screwed up the name of the show as I was trying to make it sound cool. Anyway, Mike, Brian...
He needs all the help he can get, I can tell you that.
I've fallen off the wagon here on this show.
See, you're getting close to the Christmas show. You got to get in the mode for that.
That's right. Let's try this again, everybody. Wrestling Observer Live, Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi here on the show, both sober. Talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next hour. And we were talking about the Survivor Series pay-per-view, which is coming up as soon as this show goes off the air. And before we went to the top of the hour break, Team Lay Cool against Natalya, 2-on-1 women's title. I don't think you gave a prediction for that show, did you, Mike? Or that match?
No, and I'm assuming the Lay Cool is going to break up, and this is what I'm figuring. If Beth Phoenix comes back, she helps Natalya win the belt just because there's some sort of mix-up. Lay Cool get into it. You know, they leave. Natalya and Beth Phoenix watch them leave, and Beth Phoenix attacks Natalya. I figure that would be the way they go, because without the titles, as good as the act is with Lay Cool, I actually do enjoy it. I mean, they've been hinting at this for a while, and I can't believe that they wouldn't just go ahead and break him up if they're not going to have the belt.
Nexus against Santino and Vladimir Kozlov, that of course being Justin Gabriel and Heath Slater for the tag team titles. I would be really surprised if Santino and Kozlov win the belts. I guess it doesn't matter, but you know, Santino is not the world's best wrestler. He's extremely entertaining, but as a wrestler, not very good. And Kozlov, sort of the same deal. And they've been given Nexus the big push. And obviously, if Wade Barrett won the title and Nexus had championships as well, I mean, they're behind Nexus. Nexus merchandise has been selling very, very well. So I'd be surprised by a title change here, but anything can happen. Mike, very quickly, your prediction.
Yeah, I mean, the Nexus holds on to the belts. I mean, it's a tag match to have a tag match, which amazes me that they even have the tag belts. Because if you're not going to have tag teams, why throw them together and have a defense like this?
We got three more matches to recap. We're going to do those three after the break and start taking your emails. You can always send those to WOL at WrestlingObserver.com. I'm going to get to those here in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. The Gron, Adam, and Mike, Big Audio Nightmare, Almost got it right that time. Anyway, we're talking the Survivor Series pay-per-view and a bunch of other stuff as well. Survivor Series does, of course, take place immediately after the show goes off the air. You can get the recap at WrestlingObserver.com. Dave Meltzer doing live running play-by-play, so head over there when the show is over. Head over there right now. See, we've got WrestlingObserver.com. If you're listening to this on over-the-air radio, and for whatever reason the show happens to be preempted for sports or whatever the case might be, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com. We have a live streaming link of the show at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern every Sunday. So you can listen to it on the radio or you can listen to it on the internet. Always a way to listen to the show. So check it out at WrestlingObserver.com. Team Mysterio tonight against Team Alberto Del Rio in a traditional Survivor Series elimination tag team match. It's Rey Mysterio, Kofi Kingston, Chris Masters, Big Show, and MVP against Alberto Del Rio, Tyler Rex, Drew McIntyre, Jack Swagger, and Cody Rhodes. No real reason why the babyface team shouldn't go over here. I suppose they could try to set up some sort of feud or maybe a number of feuds. But, Mike, what are you thinking for this match?
They had Rey and Show win on SmackDown and be the only ones left after the match actually was. It was Captain versus Captain. It was Rey Jr. against Alberto Del Rio. Both teams ran in. Teddy Long came out and decided they were going to have a 10-man battle royal, and Rey and Big Show were the last ones left. So you would figure that maybe the heels win on this one, but like you were saying, there's probably no reason that it's not the Big Show, and maybe even MVP, because MVP did a pretty good job talking down Alberto Del Rio. So I could see, any combination of those three guys, Big Show, MVP, and Rey Mysterio being the ones left to win for the team. I think if it is going to be Team Del Rio winning, it'll probably just be Alberto Del Rio, and that's it.
Dolph Ziggler and Caval for the WWE Intercontinental title. I did not see the angle setting this up, but I know they did it on SmackDown with Caval coming out and beating Ziggler in a non-title match and then saying that because he won the last season of NXT, he was entitled to a title shot on pay-per-view, and so he was taking it this Sunday at Survivor Series. Mike, how did the angle come across, and what are your thoughts for the match tonight?
Yeah, I've always kind of been partial to Ziggler a lot more than a lot of other people. So I think he's been carrying himself quite well, and he's grown a lot more comfortable in talking. And he came out with Vicky Guerrero and just, didn't even mention anything about the Daniel Bryan stuff and just talked about what kind of role he was on and having the hottest girlfriend and all that stuff. And, goes in there against Caval and, of course, made fun of his internet fan base and being a darling of the fanboys. And Caval beat him, and it was a pretty good little match. And it's Caval decide. Now here's the kind of the dumb thing. Caval has said I've got this deal from NXT where I got a shot against the champion on any pay per view that I wanted. Realistically, then why wouldn't you just say I'm going to wait till WrestleMania and fight the World Heavyweight Champion? But Caval decided to take Dolph Ziggler and. It's a winner either way for me. I just hope Caval looks good and tries to get some support behind him because I would like to see Caval win the belt, go on, challenge Daniel Bryan in December or something like that, and at the Royal Rumble actually have that unification match because I don't see there's really just no reason to have two belts. And again, the one guy holding the belt can bounce back and forth between both shows anyway, so you'd probably want to have it on somebody you want to do something with, which would increase the value of the title.
Now, yesterday, WWE.com announced they were going to be doing a Daniel Bryan-Ted DiBiase match for the U.S. title at the pay-per-view. And did they do an angle for this on SmackDown, or did this just come out of nowhere on WWE.com?
No, they did something on Raw. It was Ted DiBiase after the wacky dance routine.
Yeah, but they
was dancing and all that stuff.
They didn't announce it, though. So did they announce it on SmackDown, or did the announcement come here on WWE.com?
Oh, it may have came on WWE.com. I can't remember if they flashed up a graphic or anything like that. I don't believe they did of announcing anything on SmackDown. So it must have just been WWE.com, or they just assumed it was implied after he laid Daniel Bryan out on Monday.
I don't expect this to happen, but it would be kind of cool if Caval and Daniel Bryan both won and could do a singles unification match for both belts down the road. But again, I would not hold my breath.
No, and the thing is, too, I can't foresee, and I do like Ted DiBiase a lot. I just, in a different era, he would have had more time to get in and be a lot more comfortable with with who he is on screen and everything, and it's still too bad they kind of blew it when they had some force behind him with when he was smacking faces with Randy Orton back and forth there for a while in Legacy. But I just can't. I don't think it's something anybody's going to want to see, and I can't see DiBiase. As much as there's a lot of pressure on Cavall, I'm surprised nobody's saying there's any pressure on DiBiase to go out there and have a good match with Daniel Bryan, because he really is just spinning wheels right now, and it's not like they cut him or anything like that, but I can see him being pushed to the background a lot. He's got the $1 million belt is gone. Maurice will probably be gone, you know, not long after this, too. If he's not impressive, what's the point of them using him at all other than on Superstars?
Those are some of the questions here. Don't forget, Survivor Series is taking place immediately after the show goes off the air on pay-per-view, so check it out. And if you don't order the show, or if you order the show and want to get our thoughts on it as well, WrestlingObserver.com is a place to go. Dave doing live, ongoing play-by-play of the event. And Dave and I are going to be up later on tonight with a brand-new radio show only at WrestlingObserver.com, talking all of that, all the matches on the show, backstage news, preview of Raw, that sort of thing. But into the mailbag we go. This person here says, with BJ Penn having lost to the 155 and 170-pound champions twice now, what is the likelihood of him, if possible, since most people can cut around 30 pounds of their natural weight, drop down to the 145-pound division and fight Aldo for his third championship in a separate weight class? I would say the chances of that happening are, I don't want to say zero, but very slim. BJ has contemplated retirement before. He's actually admitted that after he lost to Frankie Edgar for the second time, he thought about retiring and not even having this match with Matt Hughes. But I guess he drove around town and realized he had nothing to do. So he got back into training. He got excited about the Hughes fight. He got motivated. And now he's got a big win. He did mention that he was considering ending his career at 170. So you have to remember that BJ Penn was never an amateur wrestler, and guys that did not grow up in amateur wrestling and had done this weight cutting for much of their lives. I mean, yeah, if you're a wrestler and you were a high level wrestler and you're used to cutting a lot of weight, then yeah, you can cut 30 pounds, but it's a lot harder for the guys that did not come up doing that. And to take a guy that was never really a major weight cutter and have him go in there and cut 30 pounds, you have to realize that for the Hughes fight, you know, he was 165 pounds a couple of weeks ago. And he, I know that he showed up in Detroit, and I had reports of people that saw him, and they said that he was eating pizza. So he was bulking up to 169, whereas Matt Hughes was cutting down to 169. So, you know, BJ is right around his comfortable weight, and cutting to 155, I'm sure is not fun for him, and cutting to 145, I'm sure would be just absolute torture.
Oh yeah, I mean, he probably could do it, and maybe would do it if the fight could somehow be big enough and he could be talked into it. But I mean, I'm not saying he's an old 32-year-old or anything like that, but I mean, he has made gigantic weight fluctuations, and, you know, it all kind of ties into his effort and his mentality sometimes going into fights and living his life and some of that other stuff where, again, why it wouldn't be a good idea, I don't think, long-term to even try to make that move down to 145, even though I think he could do it, and whoever he'd be in there against would be, you know, if it was Aldo or something like that, I mean, pretty damn exciting, but it's still something that has never been done. I mean, it then turns into boxing a little bit. Pacquiao's won titles in 8 different weight classes. I mean, it could be something that could be done. I just don't think long-term it would be a good idea, and there's too many other people, maybe outside the top tier of guys at 170, but, I mean, there's a lot of people in 170 that BJ Penn's going to be able to beat and at the very least be competitive with. And we're going to find that out because now John Fitch has been pulled off his Jake Ellenberger fight for February at UFC 126. And they've already got Penn and Fitch going at each other, which, you know, is a reward to Penn because, look, if Penn wins that fight, he's going to get another shot at GSP or Koscheck, whoever ends up winning that fight. I'm going to assume GSP is. But then, you know, if Fitch wins, I mean, that's then.
Actually,
Fitch,
Mike, hold on one sec. We got to head to a break. We'll talk about this more when we come back. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, I cut you off in mid-rant there, talking about the BJ Penn, his future, and what division he might fight in, and whether he might go to 145, and I will let you continue now.
Well, I was getting my roll on there. It didn't have much more to go there, but yeah, I'm not sure where it cut off, but I mean, you know, again, Penn wouldn't be able to be denied another fight against GSP, even though I don't think it would be... I think it'd be just as competitive as the last one was, but I mean, if he beats Fitch, I mean that's big, and it is going to be great for the UFC because they can at least be done with John Fitch for a while. But if Fitch does end up winning that fight, I mean, it's absolutely impossible, completely impossible for them to deny Fitch again.
It's a good question for you. This is from Nick. Mike, what Japanese matches are high on your match of the year candidate list? And Brian, if you haven't already, check out BB Hulk and Shingo, Hair versus Hair, from Dragon Gate's Kobe World Wrestling Festival show in July. It's a great match, much better than the one they had in Fall River in October.
See, I will hold off on that question.
You going to hold off on it?
I don't have my list in front of me right now, and unfortunately, because of having to do about a million and one things this year, I haven't seen too much Japanese wrestling, to be honest, at least as far as, you know, a ton of matches or anything. So I have my little list here somewhere. I'll have to pull that out here next break.
All right, I'll do another question here. It's from Levi. A lot of people welcome the idea of pushing Husky Harris and supporting Roy Nelson. Do you think they will have a mindset like, well, people like me because of how I look? Why bother trying to slim down? Agree or disagree? Well, it's different because, you know,
it's how you carry it.
Well, it's not only that, but I mean, wrestling and MMA are two completely different things. I mean, Roy Nelson being fat in MMA, as long as he wins, it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? I mean, if he goes in there and he keeps beating guys and the people get behind him being fat, you know, then it's a benefit to him. I mean, in the long term, it's best, you know, he would be best served to lose a lot of weight. It would be better just probably to prolong his career and he would live longer and that whole deal. But I mean, for right now, I mean, the idea of a fat Roy Nelson versus a jacked up Brock Lesnar, I think people can get behind that. The idea of a not so fat Roy Nelson against a giant Brock Lesnar, that one might be a little bit harder. As far as like pro wrestling, Husky Harris has got a lot of supporters because he's the son of a guy that everybody liked. He you know, grew up around people. It's just kind of, you know, he's got a lot of things going for him. He's a nice guy, pretty good worker, but he's still where he's at. Now, will Husky Harris be pushed as a main eventer with that body? I don't know if they would push him strong as a single star. Obviously, pro wrestling is a much more cosmetic business. And you cannot win your way to getting over in pro wrestling. You are booked, whether, you know, they're going to either book you strong or not. So Husky Harris would be best served to lose a little bit of weight. He appears to be getting fatter. There is a limit. It's okay. I mean, he's such a guy where I think it's okay if he remains husky. But if he just gets out of control, it's not going to serve him well in WWE. So, And I think he has been getting a little too heavy. It's going to affect his mobility as well. So he should probably trim down a little bit, but I don't think he should lose his huskiness.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, he looks a little bit more like, you know, his grandfather, because he's got that Blackjack Mulligan gene pool than he does IRS. But he's got to stay the way he is because, I mean, what if he did drop a bunch of weight or he got into the somehow, you know, amazingly became this huge, big muscle up guy? I mean, it doesn't really make any sense. And I'm wondering, though, now that they're bringing back NXT, I mean, I'm kind of surprised, and I haven't had a chance to see Florida in a while. I'm wondering what's going on with his brother, Bo Rotundo. That's what, you know, at least his name was down there, Tyler Rotundo. I would wonder if they're going to bring him up and have some sort of, you know, Harris Family Riot Squad.
I know they've had a lot of ideas of different things to do with different guys. I mean, they've had the Fortunate Sons idea for you know, over a year now with Ted DiBiase and McGillicuddy were going to be in that group and that sort of thing. But then Nexus came along, And
well, you know, they could put those guys in Nexus, and really, I mean, depending on how long you want to go with Nexus, or at least keep them maybe loosely associated with them, you could spin off that group, you know, of second-generation guys or somehow a mix thereof afterwards.
All right.
That may be requiring too much thought, but, you know.
Yeah. This person here says, heard a rumor that Randy Savage had a match with someone, possibly a jobber, going by the name Quick Draw McGraw, in which Savage gave McGraw four DDTs. McGraw supposedly died soon after due to head injuries caused by those DDTs. Fact that the jobber in question was named after a 60s cartoon character leads me to believe that this isn't true, but the person who told it to me swears up and down that it is. Did Savage really have a match with someone where his opponent died due to injuries, or is this just another case of speculation like his rumored liaison with Stephanie McMahon? Love the show. Keep up the good work. That story is not true. Quick draw.
It wasn't even Randy Savage. It was actually Roddy Piper that McGraw was feuding with.
They did an angle where Piper beat him up and they stopped the match, but it was a fake beating. And McGraw died of a heart attack. He was a big drug guy. He took a lot of drugs, and taking a lot of drugs, not good for the heart. So
and he had the body at the time too. I mean, that was the other thing. I mean, he was a fire plug of a dude. He was probably like 5'7", 5'8", and was a swollen barrel of, you know, I don't know what he weighed, 240 or whatever. But I mean, he had that body type where just, you know, now we see a little bit more of how terrible that is for you to carry that much around like that on top of everything else he was doing.
This person here says, what are the ratings for NWA Hollywood? What are your opinions of the show? I don't know the ratings. I have not seen the show. And Mike, have you had a chance to see it yet?
I've only seen little parts of it. You know, I remember they had the NWA show that Dave Marquez did, that it came out of there, that was on that Colors Network and was up online. But it reminded me of that, but again, I haven't seen a whole lot of it. I know it's, you know, I think Human Tornado's been on there, Adam Pearce. I mean, there are guys on there where it's, you know, if you do have the time, hey, why not? It is wrestling as opposed to sports entertainment in a big time way, but, you know, again, it is indie wrestling and it's free out there on their website. So I don't think the ratings, especially because the channel they're on, it's like a little co-op channel, I believe, in Orange County, California, and I think they farm it out to a couple of other places. So realistically, I mean, you'd be amazed on how many major market cities where there are TV shows that have a negative rating or a zero rating. So, I mean, it's not like Arbitron or whoever it is out there, you know, checking out the NWA, you know, the channel that the NWA Hollywood show is on.
I do know that the show is airing in the Friday night time slot that SmackDown used to have on my network TV. And it actually, when SmackDown left my network TV in that market, this show replaced it. And I know that the station was basically saying that if the show did 10,000 viewers, they would be happy. And all I know is that they are happy. So what that means, I don't know. I don't know if they even technically get ratings. I could actually probably find out. But as far as I know, everything seems to be okay. This person wants to know the problem between Randy Savage and Vince. Nobody knows! Probably about six people in the world know. And we are not among those six. So there you go. Derek here, he thinks WWE has been unwatchable for 2 years. He doesn't get the channel with ROH. TNA had been his only mediocre savior, along with tons of DVDs. It becomes clear and clear that TNA is not just in a slump, but committing a prolonged suicide. Can't help but think what the great Paul Heyman could have done with a roster as deep and talented as TNA's. It sure appeared that Dixie Carter was willing to give Heyman everything he wanted, but somehow the deal didn't happen. Well, that's because she was not willing to give him everything that he wanted. That's why the deal fell apart. Says he no longer cares, but can anyone explain how the company can shell out the millions for risky propositions, yet kvetch at the one contract that would have turned them into a legitimate pro wrestling company? Here's the problem. We don't know if Paul Heyman would have turned them into a legitimate pro wrestling company. I mean, do I think that Paul Heyman would have done a better job than Vince Russo? Yes. In fact, I do. Do I think that when Paul Heyman was through with it, it would be worth you know, millions and millions of dollars? I don't know. It is absolutely impossible to say. I mean, there are too many factors, and he wanted a lot of things that she was not willing to give him, including the ability to hire and fire people, which is a very important piece of this puzzle. So I don't know if there's anything that TNA can do at this point. I really don't. I mean, they're I don't want to say they're past the point of no return, but they're real far gone. And this is not an easy turnaround. And Paul Heyman is extremely smart. And Paul was not going in unless he got everything he wanted, because he knows this is not an easy turnaround. I mean, this will require drastic measures to turn this thing around. So when he did not get those drastic measures, he backed out of the deal. So that is the story there. And Mike, is there any hope?
Yes. I mean, there's always hope, and they could do it if they wanted to. But again, after 8 years, you just have to sit back. You can't get mad. You can't really have any opinion whatsoever. You just have to sit there and go, okay, well, just prove it to me. And until they do, I mean, you know, they can be upset hearing about Paul Heyman and saying it was never close or any of that sort of stuff. But, you know, obviously you get the same 1.1 every single week, And, you know, sooner or later, just time's going to run out for them, because they're not building upon anything. And WWE, for, again, as much of a down cycle as some people believe that they're in, I mean, that's no excuse for TNA. I mean, they should be jumping on this now. There's been a lot of these dips for WWE, and TNA just cannot figure out a way to hold on to the people that they have.
Got an email here with somebody that has a master plan for Survivor Series. It's from Steven Richards. Not that Steven Richards, by the way. But we'll read this when we come back from the break. We've also got a lot of news to talk about. I want to finish the last major segment getting into a lot of different news here, including some thoughts on Old School Raw and the Hulk Hogan A&E special. Plus, Buddy of Miz on television has been arrested, or was arrested, for a DUI. Never a good thing. So we'll talk about that, plus WWE cuts when we come back. Listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Going to read an email here, a Survivor Series prediction that was sent in by Sean for the show that starts in 20 minutes. Information of which, get the live running play-by-play at WrestlingObserver.com, whether you buy the pay-per-view or not. Dave's going to be running down the show in detail, and then later on tonight at WrestlingObserver.com, a brand new edition of Wrestling Observer Radio, only for subscribers of the website. Dave Meltzer and I running down the show in detail, backstage news, plugging Raw on Monday night, and a bunch of other stuff. 10 to 15 radio shows, actually 15 to 20 radio shows every single week, plus archive of thousands of radio shows available for subscribers. Everything. It's only $10.99 per month. That's all you pay per month. You can pay as you go and get full access to everything, including interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling. Check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. Scroll down the right-hand side of the page. Check out the latest free radio shows. If you like what you hear, sign up, especially if you love this show and you only hear it one time a week. You are missing out. A lot of shows. Dave and I have done 4 shows in the last 4 days. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. Steven here says, the most intriguing match of the Survivor Series tonight is the main event. Here's my thoughts of what's going to happen. Wade Barrett will pin Randy Orton. Cena is free. FU's Barrett, leaving him laying in the ring as the new champion. Miz's music hits. He heads to the ring with Riley and a referee, cashes in Money in the Bank. At the conclusion of the match, Riley will screw Miz, helping Barrett retain. Alex Riley joins the Nexus. They beat down the Miz. Cena and R-Truth run to the ring to make the save, but fail. The pay-per-view ends with chaos in the ring. Barrett holds the title up. Barrett's master plan was to force Cena's career in order to win the title, and in case Miz cashes in Money in the Bank, he has Riley in his back pocket as an insurance policy. That is certainly a way to go. That would require Miz to turn babyface, and I don't know if it's time for that yet. Mike, what are your thoughts?
You know what? I like that in the aspect of, I mean, they've had a very strong Riley, you know. They've had him pretty damn strong now. I know he was double fist and tap it out on Monday night and everything, but, you know, if they did have any plans of that, though, I could see them pulling them away because of the DUI charge that he got, but it wouldn't really be all that stupid of an idea, because it just gives another, you know, bright, shiny light to Nexus. I mean, Riley, he has got a great presence. I mean, he's a natural talker. His father was, too. He's a longtime radio guy, Kevin Kiley. So, I mean, he's a story that is perfect for WWE and somebody that they would probably want to showcase as he's coming up. It's just that in a lot of ways, the timing of that DUI was really poor.
Alex Not Riley
like
was
time for a good one, but you know,
yeah, he was pulled over a couple of days ago, DUI, 1:15 a.m. I believe in Tampa. It's not the first time a WWE guy has been pulled over for a DUI in Tampa. I don't know. It's interesting because Shawn Michaels and his family were in a car wreck a couple of days ago. Drunk driver hit him. They were drunk driver apparently was going 50. And hit him at about 7 p.m., and Sean drives what he calls a tank, and so they were fine. He got out of the car. I believe he grabbed the guy and yanked him out of the car by the scruff of his neck and cut one of those promos on him that he used to cut in the mid-90s when he was angry about something and scared the hell out of the guy. And they're all fine, but, you know, if something would have happened to Shawn Michaels or his family as a result of a drunk driver, I mean, you would never hear the name Alex Riley again in WWE. I mean, that would be the end. And WWE did a bunch of cuts a couple of days ago. They cut Luke Gallows, Chad Gaspard, Krista Joseph, who was Big Dick Johnson, one of the writers on the writing crew, Tiffany, Kaelin Croft, Vance Archer, and Jillian Hall. And I can tell you that Alex Riley was scared to death that his name was going to end up on that list. He was apparently spared. It is now late Sunday afternoon. He has not been released yet, so probably not going to happen. But DUIs are, you know, to me, if you, I guess, you know, Rick McGraw, for example, if you're going to take a lot of drugs and something happens to you, I mean, really, you've committed suicide. And if you take too many pills and pass out on a plane, you know, that's your deal. You're taking your own life into your own hands. But when you're out there driving drunk, and you're not only taking your own life into your hands, but you're risking other people's lives. I mean, to me, that's grounds for firing. I mean, people have argued at the very least these guys should get a wellness policy strike for this. But, you know, to me, you got to send a message. Don't drive drunk. I mean, this is a really serious deal. I mean, for a number of reasons. And to me, you know, if you wanna bring him back in 6 months, if that's what you want to do, then that's what you're going to do. But there is no excuse for that, and he probably should have been released. But he's still with company, and I don't think he's been punished at all. So there you go.
Yeah, but you know, and I this is how I there's no good way to say this. I know I've probably been desensitized to it a little bit, having been in the bar and the spirits industry and just watching sports and, you know, people get DUIs and DWIs. And I don't believe after one, I know what you're saying, and in a perfect world, you're exactly right, but I don't know if you can set that precedent for someone, because there are honest mistakes, as dumb of mistakes and as risky as mistakes as they are. I mean, there's a lot of people nationwide and worldwide that make that mistake. Now, if they make it a second time, I think you can go ahead and lay down the law. But where you step into it in wrestling, I think it was a problem, is if Randy Orton gets pulled over for three DUIs, and I'm just using him as an example, or John Cena, okay, he doesn't drink or whatever, but whatever. Take him, anybody. Now, if they get pulled over for one and, you know, Kaelin Croft gets pulled over for one, do you think they're going to fire Randy Orton if he had three? You know, no. So, I mean, so you're also, if you do something like that and lay down the law like that, you're setting a precedent that you're, in wrestling, you're really putting yourself at risk with how a lot of guys act, even though I know a lot of them just stay in their room and play video games.
Sure, the video games, yeah. So those are the cuts, and no real big surprises there, except maybe Krista Joseph, because he'd been on the writing crew forever. I still don't know what the story was with him, but he was released for some reason. And as far as the other ones there, you know, Kaelin Croft, half of the Dude Busters, surprised they only fired half of them. That's kind of odd. You know, nothing against, you know, either of them, but just strange that neither of them were over or being used, and only one was fired. So maybe there was a story there. Vance Archer had been buried on commentary, so I know they were unhappy about some things that he was doing. Jillian Hall had been sent down to Florida to work as a trainer, and there were rumors that perhaps they just terminated her talent contract and they were still going to use her as a trainer, but I don't believe that is the case. Tiffany, of course, had the issue with Drew McIntyre at the Playboy Mansion. They showed up there. This is, of course, a PG company, and WWE was not happy that they showed up there and were filmed, and it was on TMZ, and then they got into a huge fight, and she got arrested. So, obviously, when the charges were dropped and she was not brought back, it was pretty clear they had no plans for her, so that was the end of her. Shad Gaspard, I guess, is somewhat surprising. He'd gotten himself into fairly good shape. And I don't know what the deal was there. And Luke Gallows is too bad because he was probably, of everybody on this list, he had done the most in terms of getting in great shape, working hard, doing a lot with some bad gimmicks, and it's too bad to see him go.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you would want to call him an Albert or Hugh Morris or somebody like that, but he was a bigger guy that I think could have stuck around for a while because he was improving. He did lose a lot of weight. He did have some presence, and the Festus character was kind of beloved, so people didn't hate that. When he made the move to the Gallows character, they did such a good job with it that people, it wasn't like, okay, now he's something else, and it just went out of your mind. I think he did a really solid job there. So that's kind of disappointing, and I hope he's a guy that, when they do some of these things, a lot of times they'll bring guys back later on down the line, and hopefully he gets another shot there, too. I'm still broken up over Tiffany. There was a lot of potential wasted there, Brian. I'm telling you.
You're the one.
Yes, I am. See, it's bubbly and is, look, was she, it was hilariously bad, her doing, her as GM on ECW. But there did seem to be some enthusiasm there, and I really thought she was somebody because of even the whole Playboy thing and everything that, you could have farmed her out and brought her around to public events and stuff like that. It just too bad for you. This, how does this hurt Drew McIntyre? This actually helps him out immensely.
In what way?
Well, at least he can kind of clear up his mind a little bit. He doesn't have to worry about her, wrecking shop in a hotel room or anything like that. At least she'll be home.
Well, she can still wreck a hotel room when they go back to the Playboy Mansion.
Well, see, he's learned his lesson, though, because you know what? Drew McIntyre is a forward-thinking guy, and I'm sure he has learned his lesson from showing up at the Playboy Mansion.
Sure, yeah. Did you get your list of Match of the Year candidates for Japan?
Actually, I didn't. I wasn't even looking for it. I just got my ramble on there.
Oh, goodness. Well, why don't I talk about...
I didn't think of any good American matches this year. Actually, I take that back. I think of a lot of good ones. I still, overall, my Match of the Year is still Tyler Black and... Roderick Strong. I still think that was the best match this year by far.
Really? By far, you say?
Well, I mean, not like leaps and bounds. I mean, Undertaker and Shawn Michaels was good. I mean, Nakamura earlier on this year at the Dome Show. It's not like there's been, it was a blowaway, great, standout match, but just for me it was. I thought that ended up being really, really great.
My favorite match this year, and it's probably because I saw it live, was Chris Hero and Akira Tozawa at the Battle of LA. Literally, that was the favorite match that I've seen all year long. And Undertaker and Shawn was great, although it felt like I was watching a replay of the year before, which it was a replay of a 4¾ star match, so I can't complain too much. But that one was awesome. And also, the Bryan Danielson Shingo match from Dragon Gate USA was also awesome. So those are my top three that I can remember off the top of my head for this past year.
Oh, and one I actually saw recently was from the September 26th show. It was the same show that Makabe had gotten hurt in New Japan. It was Jado and Gato going for the IWGP Junior Tag Belts against Ryusuke Taguchi and Prince Devitt. And that was actually, I think it was about 10 or 15 minutes long, but that was a really great match, too, that I know is up on the New Japan site on YouTube. That's one people may want to go out of their way to see.
Hulk Hogan A&E special was something else the other night. It's probably going to be replaying on A&E. The entire idea was they decided that they were going to try to rehab Hulk Hogan. And for those of you that have ever seen anything involving Hulk Hogan, I mean, it was, I don't want to say largely BS. I mean, there was some truth to it. He and his wife did get a divorce. His son did get in a wreck. He had to pay out a lot of money to the Graziano family. I mean, there was obviously some things that were truthful in there. But it is Hulk Hogan. You're going to get an exaggerated version of everything. And it was what they had been talking about. If you recall, when Nick was in jail, Hulk Hogan went to him, and there were some jailhouse tapes that got out. And among those tapes were, I believe, Hulk Hogan and Nick discussing their ideas for a Nick Hogan reality show, where they would go in there and do a show about how Nick was doing his best and trying to do all this charity work and turning his life around and this and that. And word got out, and of course this was somewhat of a scandal. But regardless, this was the Hulk Hogan version of that exact same thing. It was a show designed to rehab Hulk Hogan. They talked about all of his problems, and they had this reenactment of when he had a gun and he was putting it in his mouth and he was contemplating killing himself. And then after 3 days of being locked in his house with this gun and not sleeping or eating or whatever, Layla Ali called and said, "Hulk, where are you? We never saw someone so sad. We love you." And that turned his life around. You know, there was some wackiness, like he tried to claim that, you know, he had to wrestle another match to save TNA and to make some money, when of course that's just outrageous that would have to take place. I mean, he's getting paid in TNA whether he wrestles or not, and they totally glossed over the Australian stuff that he did with Ric Flair. But overall, it was a very well put together documentary, but not entirely truthful. We're going to head to a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi here, and Mike does have his list of the best matches of 2010. He's going to rattle off a couple right now.
Tanahashi and Naito from New Japan in August was a good one. Nakamura and Goshi Ozaki, and yes, I am very New Japan-centric, so I like a lot of those matches, although there are a lot of great Dragon Gate ones this year, too. Shingo and Yamato. Basically, I think almost any match Shingo and Yamato were in, I think, could be a match of the year candidate. There were plenty of them, against BB Hulk and Aruki Doi being one of them there. So, I mean, there were some really good. I know there are a lot of heavy Japanese fans, and we're going to be talking about this a lot more in the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare as we get a little bit closer to the end of the year. We'll have on Joe Gagne and Alan for Life and a bunch of other people, too, to talk about a lot of their matches of the year, because for fans of Big Japan and DDT, but especially Big Japan, there were a lot of matches that they liked a lot this year, and they weren't all deathmatch style either.
And the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare is available at WrestlingObserver.com, as is all of our regular radio programming, 15 to 20 shows per week. We're going to be back here tonight at WrestlingObserver.com, brand new radio show. Myself and Dave Meltzer running down the Survivor Series pay-per-view. We'll also be back tomorrow after Raw, talking the Raw show. We'll talk some Impact and all of the wrestling and MMA news. And if you're a subscriber and you missed it, we had radio shows last night running down UFC in Detroit. Dave was there live, and we had a show on Friday as well with news on a bunch of the WWE cuts and some email questions as well. So we do radio shows all the time. Check it out in just a moment as we go off the air here. Dave Meltzer is going to be up running down the Survivor Series pay-per-view. So if you end up not getting that show and you want all of the results, or if you do get the show and you want the results, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com. Dave will be running down all of them match by match. So make sure you check that out. We're done for today, but next week we are going to be back. We'll be talking more about TNA and their December pay-per-view. We'll talk about the fallout from Survivor Series, and we'll have a lot of other news as well. So make sure everybody has a great Thanksgiving. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network.